about string engineering backgrounds, the duality, or anything like that. Okay. I was hoping to devote lectures to dbrains, but I'm realizing that we're running out of time. So we have only three lectures left. So I was hoping to devote at least two to superstrings. So we'll just do dbrains today. There will be some extra material in the lecture notes if you're curious. They're still not finished, but by tomorrow they should be done. So dbrains. I think a good way to understand dbrains is to start thinking about something we can do in quantum field theory. So suppose I'm studying quantum electrodynamics, a theory of electrons and photons, and I want to study the behavior of electrons and photons in the presence of a proton. For example, I want to study the scattering of photons or electrons from a proton at energies which are much lower than the mass of the proton. So my proton is just some very heavy object here with some internal structure, perhaps, but which we won't be able to probe, which is not even moving because it's very massive compared to the energies I'm using. And I want to figure out how to write down scattering amplitudes perturbatively in the limit where the proton is infinitely massive. And a standard way to do so is to add a source to the electron, to the quantum electrodynamics Lagrangian. Essentially, we are representing the proton by the fields sourced by the proton. In order to source these fields, we can add a term to the Lagrangian. For example, we could take the usual QD Lagrangian. And add to it something like an integral on the work line of the proton of a mu dx mu. If I start doing perturbation theory, maybe I can put an electric charge here. If I start doing perturbation theory in the presence of this term in the Lagrangian, my Feynman diagrams will include extra terms where some propagator goes from, say, an electron line all the way to the proton. To the proton line. So in space-time, I'll be considering graphs where some of the vertices are constrained to live on the proton. Another iteration of vertices just leaving generic points in space-time. So this description is valid for an infinitely heavy proton. I could even try to improve it by adding. For example, some non-relativistic position degrees of freedom for the proton. So I would say, okay, let me add some fluctuations to the position of the proton. This would be extra fields which live only on the proton, which tell me where the proton is. And I then couple these fields to the rest of the action. Yes, that's right. I can perhaps add it to the picture. It doesn't need to be a straight line. It's just some trajectory I picked for the proton. Maybe I'm carrying this proton around in some funny way. And then I can make this, I can even try to make this trajectory a bit dynamical by adding some extra degrees of freedom. So suppose I want to do a similar construction in string theory. I want to add some sources, some objects with source closed strings. So I can imagine having worksheets that look like this diagram. Okay. So this will describe some process in which some closed strings exchange, scatter from each other and exchange a closed string from some object, with some object, some source. Which means this part of the worksheet, so notice that here we had a propagator, right? In a word line formalism, this propagator, having this propagator means that when we are integrating over maps from this graph into spacetime, we have to pick a length for this line and integrate over that. It's not like these lines which are supposed to just go to infinity. This is a line of finite length. Similarly, here we have to imagine that our worksheet really ends at finite distance in our metric, in some position of space-time. So in other words, our worksheet, which usually called sigma, must have a boundary, which I'll denote as del sigma. So that means that our scattering amplitude, suppose I have a scattering amplitude of n particles at some loop level, so with some number of handles, and with, okay, sorry, the total string amplitude, sorry, for some number of particles will look like a sum over the loop order. Which means the number of extra loops I have in my worksheet. A sum over the number of boundaries because here I had one boundary, but in principle I can have several of these tubes ending on my source. Then in the same way as here, I could have put two protons, three protons, a proton and a helium atom and an hydrogen atom. So I could have had many different sources. Here I must allow myself to have several different types of boundaries. So I'd have to decide which type of boundary is boundary one, which type of boundary is boundary two, which type of boundary is boundary three. So let me say this right. Let me say it twice. So I have to pick how many boundaries of type B1 I can have. Let me just say this properly. So in the same way as in quantum field theory, I could have several different sources. And for every endpoint, I should tell you which source do I end up on. So I can sum over graphs where I have a certain number of legs ending on the first proton, a certain number of legs ending on the second proton, a certain number of legs ending on the helium nucleus. Here, I need to pick how many of these boundaries will end on the first source, how many will end on the second source, how many will end on the third source. I will discuss later what does it mean to pick, how do I pick a source, which sources can I pick. But for now, let me just keep writing. And then I have something like a power of the string coupling. And the result of some calculation. Uh, Okay, well, this would be some calculation done somehow on a worksheet with this many number of external legs, this many handles, and this many boundaries of each type. Okay. So this would, we'll have to figure out how to compute this. We'll have to give a definition in terms of some integral or some moduli space of complex structures of some sort, of some quantum field theory calculation. But essentially, we're going to take some quantum field theory calculation on this surface with boundaries. So we'll have to understand how to do that. And then we have to understand what also what are the possible geometries that this surface can have. You know, what are the matrix modulo diffeomorphisms and wild transformations when high boundaries. I'm not sure how much of that we'll manage to do today. We'll see. Yes, this represents scattering of true closed strings into true closed strings of a source. Well, we need a source. So these sources will be called D-brains. Okay? Now, notice I can even put multiple copies of the same D-brain. In the same sense, I could have put multiple copies of the same, well, not a proton because it's a fermion, but of the same object. In the same location. So here I could add an extra power essentially because when I do this calculation I get the same answer if I have the first copy of the proton or the second copy or the third copy. So I get an overall factor of 3, say. Of course, from this point of view, it just means that I put some number in front of here. I made my source bigger by putting more copies to the same object. And we could even sort of try to reorganize this a little bit. This is sometimes a useful way to think about it. The sort of couplings are called toothed couplings in general. From this point of view, this is more or less the intensity of my sources. Okay. Now you could ask why did I pick an intensity which has an integer multiple of my coupling constant? In principle, if I just look at this formula, I could say, okay, I'll put a generic number here. But there is actually, and in quantum field theory, that sometimes is the case. I mean, if I have electromagnetism, I cannot put a generic number here because of gauge symmetry. I don't. If I decide my gauge field is a certain, my gauge transformation live in some U1, then I'm not allowed to put charges which are pi, say. In general, sources can have whatever quantization they want. For example, if I have a scalar field interacting with the source, the intensity of the source can be whatever I want. But here, in string theory, somehow, as we'll see, these sources have a bit of a quantization intrinsic to it. Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what it means for the boundary to source those things. Is it like this would be passable in some way? What does it mean?
At the moment, this is just an analogy to this. Here, I'm considering this Feynman diagram becomes an integral over all maps from this graph to space-time, where the graph has a finite length here. So the analogy is an integral over all worksheets where this line ends at some finite distance. Now, why is this a source for closed strings? Intuitively, you can sort of identify this as a propagator for all the closed string modes. As you integrate over this length, you get a propagator for all the closed string modes attached to some quantity. We'll see if we can manage to compute this source. But perhaps this I can anticipate. What is the source? Well, if you want to compute the source, you can just do this. You can take a cylinder, cut it in half. Put your boundary condition here, whatever it is. You can put some state here, some string state here. Okay? And this will give you a number. This is the source for this string state. Now, the reason something special will happen in string theory, which does not happen in quantum field theory, is channel duality. So first I want to remind you what channel duality is, and then we'll apply it to this picture. So channel duality is essentially the statement that the same string diagram can represent different quantum field theory diagrams, different regions in the moduli space of Riemann's of matrix on my Riemann surface mimic different Feynman diagrams. For example, when we're studying a process like this, this process was mimicking a quantum field theory process like this, and a quantum field theory process like this, and a quantum field theory process. Sorry, will I ever manage to do it properly? Okay, and a process like this, ST and U channel. And when we computed the scattering amplitudes of two tachyons, we found indeed an answer which had poles, which resemble quantum field theory poles, in this channel, and this channel. And the poles are precisely the location of closed string states. So unitarity relates the poles in your three-level amplitudes, the sort of states which they can propagate through your spacetime. So it's consistent that I find closed string poles and closed string states propagating. Now, if I try to do a similar calculation with a boundary, for example, this, okay, something surprising will happen. Notice that these poles, these different channels, can be really thought of as different ways of cutting this surface. I can look at it this way. This will be an S channel. I can look at it this way. Or I can try to cut it in a different... Well, I'll never be able to draw this properly, but maybe... I don't know if you can see it. But if I cut it this other way, I'll get a U channel. Here, when we think about this as closed strings interacting with the source, we are cutting it like this. And this mimics a diagram of this sort. But we can also cut it like that. And it turns out that there is really a region in the space of matrix for which this is the right thing to do. And then when I compute this scattering amplitude, I will really find poles which correspond somehow to this other way of cutting the surface, which look like a process of this sort. This looks like a process where a closed string comes in. It breaks into an open string at the location of the D-brain, propagates along the D-brain, and then closes it off again. So by introducing boundaries on our worksheet, we have implicitly introduced open strings in the story. So strings, so this is a closed string. This is an open string. It's a piece of string with boundaries. So closed strings propagate as cylinders. Open strings will propagate as strips. Okay. So here, if you can see it, you can see a cylinder which opens up into a strip and closes again to a cylinder. We can try to describe it in a different way, maybe. So I have a cylinder which opens up into an open string and then closes again. So, and by unitarity, we know that if these open strings are propagating inside intermediate channels, we should also include them as possible scattering states. So once we open this Pandora box, we should also include processes where some of those cylinders are replaced by strips.
An analog of the state propagating on the brain in this QAD picture with the proton as a source?
Yes, that's precisely analog. The difference is in quantum field theory, I could have thought about my proton as not moving. I could have put random degrees of freedom on this proton. I could have put a spin degree of freedom. I could have put some position degree of freedom. I could have decided it was a uranium atom and it had all sorts of internal degrees of freedom, which could be excited by my photons. On the other hand here, once I pick my source, that's it. It will determine automatically which degrees of freedom are attached to it.
Mm-hmm. How is that diagram a diagram where you have closed strings and then you have a loop and then closed strings going back up?
Sorry, well, it's my abilities, my drawing ability.
But what's the easiest way to see the way the open string?
This is only a hole on the surface of the cylinder. Behind the cylinder keeps going. There is just a unique, I had to make models this time. So you need to now start including all sorts of processes. For example, say that I have three brains, okay? I should consider maybe a process where, first of all, I might have open strings which end on different type of boundaries on the two sides. So I could have a picture like this, where some some strips with differently colored boundaries are coming in. The boundaries are propagating along. And maybe they're also trying to, and maybe there will be a loop of yet another boundary. Okay, for example, this would be a process involving one open string decaying into two and with a loop of open strings. Or I could have, I don't know what other example could be useful, a closed string decaying into two open strings. Now, this is going to be tricky to draw, but I can try. Do you see this picture? So you can have all sorts of scattering processes involving worksheets with boundaries. Some of these boundaries can be finite. Some of them can stretch all the way to infinity. If the boundaries stretch all the way to infinity, they give rise to open string states. If the boundaries are just finite, they represent loops. They can represent sources, closed string sources, or at the same time, loops of open strings. So you could interpret this also as the two open strings within which interact with each other and with the closed string sourced by another brain. Of course. Okay, but right, so the crucial message is that deep brains come automatically with their own degrees of freedom in the form of open strings. They're determined by the sources that you picked. In particular, if you look at if you ask a question of, for example, what's the space of open strings which live between two types of sources, let's say source B1 and source B2. Suppose I have n copies, and one copy of the source B1, and then two copies of the source B2. Right? So in order to answer this question, I need to quantize my worksheet theory, my scalar fields, my Gauss, and so on a strip instead of the cylinder. I'll get some sort of a Hilbert space of states. But then if I take multiple copies of this boundary, I'll end up with n1 times n2 copies of this Hilbert space, essentially. So I have a sector where this boundary is one of the copies, and this boundary is another of the copies, and I can do that for every choices of copies. So this essentially tells you why these integrals have to be integrals. I couldn't take n1 to be pi. I couldn't take these two couplings to have a generic quantization, because otherwise I would have had fractional powers of a vector space. Okay. Fractional number of copies of a Hilbert space. So essentially unitarity at the end. The requirement that you can reinterpret the closed string processes as open string processes, and that the poles have a correct normalizations, is what ends up quantizing these two couplings. Okay, another observation which I think it's useful is that, so you can think about these open string modes as a big matrix, and 1/2 matrix of modes. And when you look at processes, let me just remove this for simplicity. You know, some even simple three-level processes between open strings. So to see that the boundaries go through from one open string to the other. So suppose that I had the first copy of the blue boundary and the third copy of the green boundary. This open string also will live in the third copy of the green boundary times some copy of the pink boundary. And this open string will use the same copies of the blue and pink boundaries. So if you express this in terms of fields, you see that the couplings the interactions look like this. So these matrices of fields interact through matrix multiplication. So if you try to write an effective Lagrangian for these open string modes, it will be built out of products of these matrices and traces of products of these matrices. So there is a, now this sort of, if you see these sort of expressions in quantum field theories, you typically have symmetries like a UN1 gauge symmetry, or a UN2, UN3 symmetry, because you can rotate these indices in opposite ways while keeping this expression invariant. And indeed, D-brains, if you have n copies of a D-brain, you essentially always end up with a UN gauge theory. Living on the brain, living on this source. This is definitely not something that you encounter in quantum field theory. In quantum field theory, if you take 10 copies of a helium nucleus sitting at the same point, you don't get an AU10 gauge theory living on them. But this happens for deep brains. It's very crucial property of deep brains. And allows non-abelian gauge theories to appear in string theory in a very nice way. This is a bit analogous to the statement that closed strings always give you a graviton. Open strings essentially always end up giving you modes that describe the motion of the D-brain and gauge fields living on the D-brain. I want to say one word about the DSFT, although I'm not sure how clear this will be. But in this setup, we were thinking about a situation where I have some perturbative processes with some sources which are perturbatively small. So I'm summing over the number of loops and the number of times I interact with that source. Okay? So these are the numbers of times I interact with some source. In other words, number of loops. You could imagine taking these integers to be very large, even as the coupling is small. So that these numbers start being of order one, even if this is just an infinitesimal coupling. Usually this would be a bad thing to do in quantum field theory. Quantum field theory perturbation theory is not convergent. This is an asymptotic power theory. If you try to make the coupling of order one, you just get nonsense. But it turns out that this sort of sum over the number of boundaries is much better behaved. You can sort of imagine rewriting this as a sum over number of handles or some expression function of these couplings. At least formally, you can imagine doing so, resumming this theory and getting something that looks like this. Now, this starts looking like a closed string theory again. Somehow, if you make your sources, the number of D-brains large enough so that they really start affecting the space-time, they really start back reacting, producing a metric, maybe looking like a black hole, say. Then you can imagine that somehow summing over some integrating away somehow the open string modes, summing over all the number of times you interact with the source, can produce an effective closed string theory in the background of these sources. This notion of open closed duality. Somehow what string theory manages to do is to mimic the effect of these sources by adding loops of open strings. This is only a sketchy statement, but it's possible to take sort of a decoupling limit, which makes this statement precise. That's what Maldacena did when he discovered ADS-CFT. He took a sort of limit in which on the right-hand side, you focus in the neighborhood of the D-brains, where somehow the effect of the D-brains overwhelms whatever background you originally had. And on the other side, you focus on the open strings. You decouple completely the closed strings, you just leave the sum of the open string modes, which give you a gauge theory. And the result is an equality between a calculation done in gauge theory and a calculation done in closed string theory in some background. And that's ADS-CFT in its first incarnation. Okay, now we have still 15 minutes, and maybe I can say a few words about what these boundary conditions mean and how to do calculations. How do I compute something like this? So what is a good way to think about it? You can sort of attack the problem in two different ways. One way is pragmatic. You could say, okay, I have this nice BRST invariant formalism to discuss closed strings. What's the minimal way to extend it in order to describe open worksheets with boundaries as well? That means essentially you want to pick some boundary conditions for your fields, boundary conditions for your ghosts, in such a way that BRST symmetry is still preserved. That's a possibility. If you remember, the BRST charge was the sum of something holomorphic and something anti-holomorphic. So the BRST charge was something like an integral of CTX plus BC DC, roughly, plus the contour integral of C bar T bar plus B bar C bar the bar C bar. So this was sort of the definition of the BRST symmetry is acting, for example, on closed string states. Okay. Now, in particular, I would like it over there to kill. I would like this, the picture over there, up there in the blackboard, to be BRST invariant. So I should ask what happens when I act with my BRST operator somehow on the state created by this boundary. What happens if I take my contour integral to be able to run around the circle in that amplitude over there? Another question I could ask is, under which conditions I can define a BRST charge acting on open string states? So if I define this as not as a contour integral, but as an integral on the strip, under which condition this is still well-defined, nilpotent, invariant under translations. And there is a natural way to make it happen, which is sort of to relate holomorphic and anti-holomorphic things at the boundary. So if you pick your boundary conditions in a way that tie together holomorphic and anti-holomorphic object, it's possible to make the BRST charge work well. I don't have really time to discuss the details, but very roughly, you impose boundary conditions like T equal to T bar at the boundary, and then B equal to B bar when restricted to the boundary, and maybe C equal to C bar when restricted to the boundary. Okay. More in components, this constraint looks like this. T with one index parallel to the boundary, one index perpendicular to the boundary vanishes. So you could use this perspective. This is, you could say, okay, this is just a natural way to make the BRST symmetry still work. It gives me good answers. I'm happy with it. Of course, you could also try to figure out how to get here, starting from more higher up in our derivation. For example, you could ask, okay, under which conditions I can think about worksheets with a metric and while invariance and diffeomorphism invariance and gauge fix that. And the final answer of that process will be the same. For example, it turns out that this is the condition for while invariance in the presence of a boundary condition. If you have a generic quantum field theory and a boundary condition, and you want to have sort of preserve to still have energy conservation, to have this boundary condition to be well-behaved, to have the theory still coupled to a metric, you generally have a boundary condition that tells you the T perpendicular parallel restricted to the boundary is the derivative of something. There's sort of a boundary stress tensor which controls how much energy is absorbed or released by the boundary. But while symmetry requires this to vanish, in the same way as it requires the trace of the stress tensor to vanish. In a similar way, a condition like this comes from the fact that when you define worksheets with boundary, a natural way to do it is to have a gauge symmetry, which is diffeomorphisms, which leave the boundary where it is. So having vector fields which are only parallel to the boundary at the boundary. And this corresponds to the condition imposed on these ghosts, on the C ghosts. And then the equation of motion essentially end up fixing the condition on B. So this can be obtained from first principles, or it can just be given as a, this is just the way to make things work. Usually you'll find the latter in textbooks, but all of this can be obtained. So in order to discuss which, notice I didn't put a specific boundary condition on the X fields. I only put the boundary condition on the stress tensor. Now you can ask which boundary conditions on the X fields will make this happen. These boundary conditions will be the possible choices of sources, the possible choices of D-brains. So this component of the stress tensor is for the scalar field is essentially the normal derivative of the scalar field times the parallel derivative. So you can say immediately how to satisfy this. For example, you could say, I want to take the normal derivative of the scalar fields to vanish at the boundary. These are called Neumann boundary conditions. Turns out that these are the correct boundary conditions to describe a source which exists everywhere in space-time, and to describe open strings which can move everywhere in space-time. This gives rise to something that is called a D25 brain for some silly nomenclature. It extends in 26 directions, but it's called D25. And it's a straightforward exercise to quantize the scalar fields on a strip with normal boundary conditions, derive the string spectrum, and you find indeed that there is a, well, there is a tachyon, as usual, in the open string sector too, and then you get gauge fields. In the same way as we got gravitons for closed strings. Essentially, these boundary conditions can also be written as a relation between del x and del bar x. So they sort of glue together holomorphic and anti-holomorphic oscillators, leaving only one set of oscillators. So instead of having a minus one mu, a minus one bar nu, which gives me the graviton, you just have a mu, a minus one mu, which gives you the gauge field.
This is for all 26
fields.
This condition?
Yes.
It's for all the fields.
Or we can have another possibility to have some sort of mixed boundary condition. Mixed Neumann Dirichlet. To do that, you set the normal derivative of some directions I guess 20. Let me say P. And the parallel derivative in the other directions to vanish. If the parallel derivative, if the derivative along the boundary vanishes, it means that the field is constant at the boundary. So I get to pick the position. These are called DP brains. They have a P plus one dimensional volume, so they represent some sort of P plus one dimensional object in space-time to which open strings are attached. The position of this object are these fields, and as usual, they become dynamical fields. So some of the modes that here were giving you gauge bosons, here end up giving you fluctuations in the position. Now, historically, people discovered this first, and then asked what happens to this under t-duality. It turns out that t-duality in some direction exchanges Dirichlet normal boundary conditions. And so they found Dirichlet brains too. But these are just very special cases. You can do this in many more, in more general ways. These are nice boundary conditions because they are free boundary conditions, not interactive boundary conditions. But in general, you can just say, okay, I have some submanifold in space-time. We call it N. Okay? And I require my fields at the boundary to live in N. And the normal derivative of the fields at the boundary to be perpendicular to N. This choice still classically makes this vanish because the parallel derivative goes along n and normal derivative goes perpendicular to n. So these are classically while invariant boundary conditions, but they have a while anomaly. Well, okay, they have anomaly. What I mean, there is an RG flow. So it turns out that this manifold, if you pick a generic shape for your D-brain, there will be some RG flow. You will not have one invariance. The beta functions for the way this works is that T parallel perpendicular is not really zero, but is the derivative of some other operator with coefficients which can be thought of as beta functions for some boundary couplings, some couplings that describe the boundary conditions. So effectively, that means that you get equations of motion. So the vanishing of the beta functions give you equations of motions. So your D-brain, in the same way as the metric of in which closed strings move cannot be generic but must satisfy Einstein equations at the leading order, the shape of D-brains is not free, but is constrained by some equations of motion, which come from some from variant of the Nambu-Goto action called the DBI action. And the Nambu-Goto action is essentially the universal thing that describes objects, relativistic objects moving in space-time. So it's not surprising that it appears here, too. Okay. Yeah, I don't think there is much of a point going into the quantization of the theory on the strip or on the cylinder. This might actually happen in some of the tutorials. Maybe it has already happened, I'm not sure. But you can use these boundary conditions and compute, for example, which closed string states are emitted by a boundary. You find that D-brains really emit all sorts of closed string states. They emit the whole tower of closed string states. And right, then you can find the spectrum of open strings in various circumstances. Let me see. Well, actually, there is a bit of time, so perhaps I can try to do at least one calculation. Yeah, I think I have time. Any questions first? Sorry. Yes.
I have a question about that calculation over there. So you said, so you start off with the theory of closed strings, right?
Yes.
And then you add sources. And then you said that when you integrate over the sources, you get some effective theory, which is again the theory of closed strings.
Yes. It's an effective theorem.
Sources play exactly when you started off with the theory of closed strings and you integrated over the sources again? I mean, were there intermediate open string states that were integrated over or something like that?
Yes, so this effective action is not going to describe all possible processes. For example, it's not going to describe you the scattering of open strings. But as long as you are asking questions about the motion of closed strings, you can imagine having an effective action for these closed strings moving in this background.
So essentially, the intermediate open string states have been integrated over, and you're only left with closed string states.
Yes, now this might be problematic because some of these open string states are probably light. So this effective action is going to probably have some troubles if you ask the wrong questions. But
so basically, the only role being played by these sources in a closed string theory was that they were giving you open string states as intermediate states.
No, they changed the background, right? So you start from something like closed strings in flat space and put a whole bunch of, say, these zero brains here. Then you create a black hole, kind of a supersymmetric black hole or something like that. Or at least you create a pretty strong perturbation in space-time. And you can ask, you could have said, okay, why didn't I just define my closed string theory in the presence of this perturbed space-time? I could have done that. Now, the space-time has an horizon, so probably if I start sending my strings into the horizon, at some point I'll encounter questions that I cannot quite answer, but as long as I don't get too close, I'll be fine. So this has been mimicked by a calculation in flat space, but introducing boundaries in the worksheet. Actually, you probably have a lecture after this, right? Yeah, you know, I don't approve of going over. I think we can stop here.